Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bets.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Carson's Corner is brought to you by www.graythought.com. That's www.graythought.com. And onthemat.com. Please make sure to visit www.onthemat.com. We're back, folks, with another extremely informative and entertaining show. That's what we produce here at Carson's Corner. I'm your host, Bob Carson. Literally tens of thousands of you heard it already, but scroll down on our Podomatic site or embedded player to see the recent shows with Jeff Munson if you haven't checked them out already. We've been on a really big hot streak of interviews since I got back, and my discussion with Jeff is something I felt quite pleased with and proud of. I have literally listened to this interview about four times already. I burned it to a CD, both parts, and I've been playing it in my car. Unfortunately, my CD player is crapping out right now, and it's not reading any CD I put in the CD player, and I hit eject, and it says that there's no disc in the CD player, so I have to get a new CD player. I'm actually kind of excited about that. They have these new car stereos now that have the USB port in them, so you could, you know, transfer WAV files, you could transfer MP3 files right onto your car stereo. It's pretty amazing. I'm going to be getting that in the next couple weeks or so. But I'm telling you, if you get a chance, go check out this interview. It's on carsonscorner.podomatic.com. It has gotten rave reviews for the content. And you know, Jeff is someone that has very complex thoughts and positions. And this made for a great discussion. Both of us had some facts. We had a lot of, you know, opinion. And it was really, really something fun, and I'm sure a lot of people listened to it, and a lot of people were informed. Well, this week's guest doesn't need a ton of help in that regard. You know who he is. It's the MFC president, Mark Pavlich. He's going to discuss the huge news about his promotion, and after I got off the phone with Mark the other day, I was very, very excited to hear him speak and set the record straight about, you know, some of the rumors circulating about his promotion. So we're going to play you that interview right now. It's about a half hour or so. When we come back, it'll be some news and rumors, and we'll go from there. Here it is. Here is my interview with Mark Pavlich. Mark Pavlich is back. The man behind Canada's MFC promotion returns to our show when interest in his promotion seems to be at an all-time high with new signings and rumors about the organization's future all over the internet right now. Mark rejoins me today to give us the inside story in all these goings and what's going on. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Well, great to be back, Bob. Thank you.
Like I said during the interview, this has to be an interesting and hectic time for you. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to bring the Maximum Fighting Championship to the next level, right? It's like playing that advanced video game, and I'm at the highest level. I just have to get to that next level, and then I'll be on where I want to be, and that's what's taking place right now.
There's no way around some of these rumors out there, so let me try and tackle them head on one by one. First of all, I know everyone listening wants me to ask this right off the bat. Here it goes. Is the MFC for sale?
You know, it's funny. It's not per se for sale, but I am entertaining offers from people for the first time ever in 11 years. In the past, I've had, I don't want to exaggerate, let's say more than 20 to 30 people come to me over the last 11 years wanting to buy into the MFC or buy it outright. And I've always denounced it, no matter what number it was or what, someone proposed to me. And I did that over the last 11 years because I have such a great deal of passion for my organization. I still have the same passion, but at the same time as I see the MFC, no question, in my mind, and as well as the knowledge that our company has, we should be number two in the world. And we are, in my opinion, number probably three in North America right now. And it's very frustrating because the knowledge that I have, the experience I have, I think we should be there, and I get frustrated at times, and it's the first time in 11 years it came to that point where I said, okay, then, if people keep wanting to buy it, I'll sell it, but it's not per se for sale, but I am
right.
Entertaining offers.
I appreciate your honesty. It sounds, you're being really quite honest with the fans here. You're saying basically, listen, I'm getting a little tired. The thought has crossed my mind. Nothing is in the works right now. You're frustrated that you think your organization is number three in North America. I kind of have a couple questions. Who would be number two, Bellator? And why are other organizations ahead of your organizations in your estimation?
Well, no, I'd say UFC is number one, Strikeforce is number two, and then I would say I'm number three. That organization you mentioned, I've never even watched one of their shows before. Look at them, I can't name five fighters that fight in their organization. I don't know. I've never been a big fan of them. I've never felt myself wanting to watch it or need to watch it. Their organization's never been run on blood, sweat, the grind, the work ethic of the Maximum Fighting Championship. I know that for a fact. They're funded by different hedge funds and different people and different. That's
right.
Not who we are. We're a family business that runs on guts. You know what I mean? I mean guts, and that's the difference. And that's why I think we're miles ahead of them. I think we're miles ahead of them social media-wise. We're miles ahead of them broadcasting-wise with HDNet.
Right.
We're ahead of them with sponsorship. Fighter roster-wise, growth of fighter roster, I'm ahead of them as well. That's how I look at it. Like I said, will we be talking about them in a year from now, 2 years from now? I highly doubt it, right?
What would you be doing if you hypothetically sold the MFC? Would you be consulting? I'm sure you'd still be around the business in some form.
That was the big major problem. See, you're smart, Bob, because that was the question I asked, right?
Yeah.
What would I do? See, people are very delusional because I already have I'm okay, financially. At the same time, is I live on a golf course. I don't golf, right? I don't really like to go on vacation. It bothers me. My version of a vacation is going to Vegas for 4 days with my family, and that's pretty much the magnitude of any type of vacation I want to take. I don't really care about fast cars. I don't really care about, it's weird. It's like, I wouldn't even know what to do. So
right. For
me, that's a gigantic problem, right?
Sure.
So even if I sold them and had a lot of money, what am I going to do? right? That's not.
Yeah.
I'm a different individual. I don't. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to go out and buy a Lamborghini because I wouldn't even know how to drive one.
No, I absolutely. And you know, I got to ask you. Those rumors started when you posted a Facebook message stating that a sale price for the MFC organization would be in the realm of $3 million. I don't know whether that's American or Canadian dollars, but what was your intent? Was it just you were just, like you said, just expressing your frustration over what is happening?
Correct. And you know what I thought was funny, too, was, see, people said, oh, the MFC's worth way more money than that, right?
Yeah.
And here's the delusion of the people in the mixed martial art business. No, it's not. Okay, it's worth about $3 to $4 million, realistically. When you hear people going, oh, DW paid $40 million for this show and this and that, that's not true, right? It's realistic-wise. What are you buying when you buy something, right? You're buying the TV rights. You're buying the sponsorships. You're buying the fighter roster. You're buying the equipment from the organization. That's it, right? These other shows, they're not worth 10 cents, right? Like, they're just not. And the delusion is people just put out these fictitious numbers going, oh, this is what this costs. And that's not true.
Well, you know, I think it's safe to say that your post about the sale of the MFC was not just to get people talking. I mean, there is, you know, real purpose to it. It has a deeper purpose. Because I know you like to get people talking, but this was not one of these instances.
You're correct. And you know what? That's a sad day for me because that's the first time ever in 11 years I thought, well, let's see, why would I sell this show? Listen, we're a family business, I repeat that, and the difference is I see on my wife's face, it's not her dream, okay? The MFC's never been her dream, it's my dream, right? But
right.
If I've seen the way that she's worked in this business, you know, and it's unbelievable the hours that she's put in, and I see she looks tired to me now, right?
Mm.
And don't forget, we're very successful in the mixed martial art business. At the same time as we don't have 500 employees, okay? And that's another thing, right? Because there's so many people that want to come work for the MFC. But, you know, if I get an application from people, you know, I get X amount a week, you know, how many of them really know anything about the mixed martial art business or how they can help our organization? The answer is zero.
You've been quoted as saying that your character is different from a lot of the promoters who sold their shows to the UFC, Scott Coker being the most obvious example. Do you genuinely believe that to be the case? And can you tell our listeners a bit more about what you see as being the difference between you and someone like Scott?
I think Scott Coker is a nice person, and I think that he generally enjoys MMA, and you know, but I don't really think he has the guts of it like I do. And that's why when it came, I think they had to sell that show to DW. I think he had no choice. I don't think it was making an overabundance of money. I think the only thing that was so exciting or even remotely exciting about that organization is their Showtime deal. That's it, right? Even fighter-wise, there's you know, a handful of really great fighters and the rest are whatever.
Now, another very big piece of news related to your show was the announcement of a new TV deal with HDNet and Mark Cuban. That's a 5-year deal, correct?
Yeah, 5 years. And, you know, it was myself, Andrew Simon, Adam Swift, we went over it back and forth. And, you know, it was weird because they've always been unbelievably loyal to me. And then at the same time as I've always been unbelievably loyal to them. But then it's funny because I started getting calls from other networks that had interest in the Maximum Fighting Championship. Hey, heaven forbid why you'd want to have any interest in my show, right? Being around for 11 years, okay? Like, you know, you think any TV network would want to be involved with an organization that has some form of longevity, and they know that tomorrow morning when you wake up, we're still going to be here.
Now, what exactly did you sign up to provide for HDNet? Is it just more fight cards or?
Yeah, all live fight cards. And then HDNet has also became my biggest sponsor now as well.
I see.
And that's a huge difference. And like I said, you know, and it's weird because these other broadcasting networks that were kind of pursuing us, it's different, man. Like the people at HDNet, I know them. You know what I'm saying? It's not, they're not faceless executives, right?
Sure.
You know, Mark Cuban flew to Edmonton to meet me when we first did the deal, You know, what companies do that kind of stuff? They're, you know, fax me the contract or, you know, email me the contract. No, Mark Cuban flew here to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada to come meet with me and sat down. We had dinner and we went back and forth. These are the type of individuals you're dealing with at HGNet. That's, you know what, the deal itself inspired me to forget the thought of selling the MFC because I saw people like Mark Cuban and Andrew Simon and Adam Swift, the main executives of HGNet, really show me that we believe in you. They validated me, and they said, go, you're the man, right? And sometimes in life, I think you need to hear that from time to time.
The picture of you and Cuban that accompanied the press release seemed to sum up the situation perfectly. The expressions that you two made me glad that I'm not someone trying to negotiate against you guys. I mean, that looked like a pretty formidable team, Cuban and Pavlich. For some reason, I could see you guys causing thousands of dollars worth of hotel room damage under the right circumstances. True or false?
No, Mark's a cool guy, man. I mean, you know, like I said, I've never emulated or looked up to anybody. Even no disrespect to even my own father. Okay, I never did. And after I met Mark Cuban, I noticed there was something different about him that I look at him to almost like a mentor. You know, I look at him as someone that, you know, even with his basketball, you look at 11 years of, you know, trying to get at Mavericks to a certain point, and then 13 years, excuse me, and then he wins the championship, and then you see his, his reaction to all that kind of stuff, and that's, you know, sometimes that's what it's going to take. I think that I'm going to have that same reaction, like when he won the championship this year. I'm going to have that with the MFC in the next few years of being in that other brand of MMA, the next best thing, that people are going to go, hey, they are the next best thing. And I need people to really get behind that bandwagon and push it.
It definitely sounds as if the deal will be mutually beneficial for both parties. There's definitely a lack of well-produced non-MMA UFC events out there for sure. Another headline that's got a lot of people talking is the announcement of Antonio McKee's return to the promotion. Before we talk about his title fight, let's give people your side of the story about the title being vacated after an injury. What happened with McKee?
Vacated. He went to DW show. He lost a split decision, which he absolutely got robbed in.
Yes.
And then he he's standing there going, what should I do? What should I do? And then I was just recently in Los Angeles. I sat down with his manager, Steve Rusich, and with McKee. And McKee fights his best when everybody's doubting him, when everybody's turned their back on him, when everybody thinks he's done. That's when he's doing his best. And then I signed Brian Cobb, the kid from California, the teacher, and I've signed him for many fights. He just beat Drew Fickett, and he's ranked in the top 10 in the world. And these are by the real rankings, not by, you know, the ones that DW puts out that he all
yeah, right. It's all his fighters, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? So Cobb's in the top 10 right now in the world, and he's with the Maximum Fighting Championship. And the difference is that, you know, I'm going to put the two together, and now McKee looks at it as, you know, he thinks that I want him to lose. He thinks that I want him, you know, I don't want anybody to lose. I want to see a great fight. I want to see him fight to his potential once and for all to live up to that. And Mr. Cobb is just an all-around great human being, and at the same time, as he has a very mean streak in him when he fights.
Yeah, I've seen him fight. I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he was with Bellator, and he's a good wrestler, good striker. I mean, he's an all-around fighter. He's got somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 wins or so. Now, going back to McKee, he claims he was stripped of the title involuntarily. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. And also regarding McKee, he's hugely talented, as you know, and I don't think anybody disputes it, but some people would definitely argue that his mouth occasionally makes him a liability for promoters because he likes to voice his opinion loudly, which, by the way, I agree with almost everything he says. How much of a headache would you say dealing with that aspect of his personality is for you?
I'm not sure, Bob, but at the same time, I get great enjoyment out of his stuff. Right?
Sure.
Now, at the same time, as I'm telling everybody on this broadcast, I'm going to take this approach on it. If he comes in here and humps Brian Cobb's leg for five rounds, I'm done with him, right? Like, You have to understand, you're coming back and you're in this situation. I want it to be exciting. I want the fans to get crazy like I get crazy for fights. And if you can't produce that, go fight somewhere else. I'm not bringing that brand of MMA to anybody, and I'm not going to make excuses to fans either saying, you know, well, it was strategic. No, it was bullshit. People want to see great fights. They want to see violent fights. They want to see physical fights, and that's what I want to bring them. And if I can't bring them, I'm not doing my job, and they have a right to criticize me.
Right, exactly. McKee, and you do this. When people come back, when Fika came back, when a lot of people come back to MFC, you don't give them an easy road. There's no easy road in the MFC. I mean, Brian Cobb, as you mentioned, is an extremely game opponent. He did very well, of course, against Drew Fickett. Were you surprised by his performance against Drew Fickett?
No. I wasn't surprised at all. And the difference is that Cobb took the fight on short notice. And I think because he read the line on him, you know, the gambling line, and he was a huge underdog. And I think guys like Cobb like that. They like the idea that no one believes in me, no one thinks I'm going to win, and I'm going to show everybody. And that's the kind of guy he is. Reminds me of somebody.
Yeah, I think a lot of people slept on this guy just a little bit. He's a well-rounded fighter. He fights smart. You know, why do you think? Because maybe he doesn't have a boisterous personality.
Correct.
You know, and that's why maybe fans overlook him a little bit.
School teacher, very respectful guy, beautiful wife, you know, nice guy. You know, so he's not going to come across. But I'll tell you, man, when you saw the ending of that fight with him and Fickett, you seen how violent he was. There's a streak in that guy, and I brought that up with him, and he started laughing, right? And I'm a great judge of character when it comes into the fighting business, and I can tell you, very well mannered, very well, you know, respectful guy. And then at the same time, as the last 30 seconds of that fight, he looked like someone stole something from him, right? So
yeah.
There's some demons in that in Brian Cobb's head.
Well, you know, the matchup versus McKee is kind of difficult to predict, although I think that maybe Cobb's punching power could be a real factor in that.
Correct.
One.
Correct. Yes, 100%.
Now, Fickett had a great run before that loss to Cobb. Should we expect to see him back in the UFC after a scheduled Japanese fight with Kawajiri?
You mean back in the MFC?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. He's still signed with our organization. He'll be back, you know, immediately. He has the right to go fight in Japan. His contract is a North American contract, and he has that right, you know. So his new manager called and said, Mark, you know, is it okay? And I said, yeah, it's fine, you know. But if he loses badly in the fight, we will have a different issue.
Also, Marcus Davis looked pretty good in his rematch versus Pete Spratt. Spratt is definitely better when they first fought, but Davis seemed to control him and absorb everything he was hit with.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's funny too. I expected that fight to be even better than it was. I was kind of disappointed in it, but at the same time, I'm not disappointed in the two guys because they were respecting each other's power and you know, skills, and that's what happens sometimes in fights like that. You get two fighters that, you know, they almost respect each other too much.
Where do you see Davis going in the MFC?
I'm not sure yet. We're in talks right now with his agent, you know, trying to see if we're going to work out a deal. And, you know, my 155 division right now is off the chart. So, I mean, you know, and there's a collective mix of grapplers and strikers.
Let's talk about some other fighters we could potentially see in the MFC in the future. How about Travis Luter?
Travis was here before. He's just inconsistent right now, and that's kind of the problem with him. He's just
right. He's
not fighting on a consistent basis, so I'm not really looking forward to signing guys that are kind of in and out. You know, that's why I signed guys like Diego Lima and Curtis DeMars and Jamie Toney and those type of fighters, because they're exciting fighters, win or lose, you know. Andreas Spang, you know, the David Heaths of the world. You know, those are the guys I love. And, of course, I have Ryan Jimmo, who's ranked in the top 20, you know, 20, 25 in the world. And one of the most exciting fighters, forget about ranking systems, how about Dwayne Lewis, right? I mean,
right.
Has anybody ever seen a boring Dwayne Lewis fight? And that's what I'm looking for in my organization. It's like, you know, you want to build up your fighters on your side of whatever you do, people, go ahead. But I'm not selling people falsehood here. I'm telling you about real exciting fighters, and that's what I have.
Now, Jimmo is one of those guys that you've really helped to build from the ground up. Do you have any concerns at all about other promotions trying to poach fighters away from you?
Jimmo would be one of those guys, but see, Jimmo, yeah. Jimmo is a guy that you have to put. He's a total style fighter. If you put a wrestler with him, he'll the wrestler might try to make it boring with Jimmo, and then Jimmo will go along with that. He'll beat him easy, right? But if you put someone like a Wilson Gouveia, like that tried to push Jimmo and try to bully him, that's the best fight I can find for Jimmo. A guy like a Wilson Gouveia that tried to bully him, and then Jimmo just destroyed him, you know, from one end to the other. And the perfect fight for Jimmo next would be a guy like Keith Jardine, but Jardine's manager has amnesia and can't return phone calls. So you know what? To be honest with you, I don't think Keith Jardine could beat Jimmo. So I wouldn't answer my call back either because.
Oh really?
Because Jimmo will lay a beating on Keith Jardine. Like he will beat him from one end of the ring to the other and back and forth because that's the kind of style that Jimmo. Does the best against, and I know that I don't even know if he's really signed with Carver's show. He kind of is. He did a one-off kind of thing. I don't even know if he's still signed with them, but the manager has got amnesia because he heard Ryan Jimmo's name.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask you is what's going on. The last I saw of Jardine, he fought Gegard Mousasi in Strikeforce, and I believe the fight was a draw, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, it was a draw, but Mousasi just put it on him. There was a point taken away or whatever, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no guarantee that Strikeforce is going to be solvent and that the UFC is going to keep Strikeforce around because Dana White did an interview not too long ago and said, oh, we're going to try to keep Strikeforce running, but if you look at every other single promotion they've acquired, they've shut them down in due time. So
of course, and he'll do the same with them too as well. It's just a matter of time, and that'll take place, and you know, no big deal. You know, the fighters will have a place to fight.
Exactly, and you'll also that might create some opportunity for you. I mean, you've got guys that are in Strikeforce that I think are very, very good fighters. Like
I agree. I like Tyrone Woodley. I like him a lot, and there's a few other guys I really like. And you know, those are just guys I like. You know, I've met them, I've talked to them. They've made interest to fight in the Maximum Fighting Championship, and you know, that's the difference too between the two organizations too, between Coker's and mine. Most guys will fight more often in the Maximum Fighting Championship, and that's a big thing because even if they get a few extra bucks fighting in that organization, they'll fight more in the MFC, and they'll probably have sponsors more because they're fighting more.
That's right. That's a very, very good point. You know, in the UFC and Strikeforce in general, especially in the UFC, but now since Strikeforce is under the Zuffa banner, these divisions have become highly consolidated.
Correct.
And it's really unfortunate. I mean, you know, now the UFC apparently is going to be on off of Spike TV, so all of this plays into the mix when it comes to the livelihood of fighters, and I just,
that's right. You're right.
You know, I look at what you guys are doing, and you guys make an effort, and you guys are very, very consistent as far as the amount of shows that you put on. You just signed an extension with HDNet Fights, so they're going to be fighting a lot more often in your organization, and there's a real shot at getting a title in your organization because of the amount of shows that you put on,
if you go, okay, I'm going to be in that show, I'm going to fight twice a year, right? Or I'm going to be in the MFC and I'm going to fight 20, I'm going to fight maybe 4 to 5 times a year, right? And then you do the mathematics with your sponsors and the rest of the stuff. You go, wait a second, you know, I want to fight. I don't want to sit on the bench.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I think a lot of people are starting to notice. And, we get a ton of great fighters in our organization.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, if you fight twice in the UFC in 1 year, you're lucky. I mean, you know, God forbid you have an injury or something like that. Then what are you going to do? You know, it's really, really unfortunate. Listen, Pav, I'll let you get back to your busy schedule in just a few moments. Before we go, can you give our listeners your vision of the future for the MFC promotion? What course are you charting in the wake of the new HDNet TV deal?
Well, I'm really working on bringing the brand of MFC outside our marketplace, which I did recently at Caesars Windsor in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, with 5,200 fans were at our show. And those are the type of things I'm going in that direction. And then as well as I'm looking to do another deal with the Fight Network in Canada to broadcast our events after HDNet, just for the fact of 'cause in that area, there's not a lot of people that have HDNet, and it's very important to get the MFC brand out all which ways. But it's my job. They're putting me on in a situation now where they're saying, okay, step up. You know, and I have to deliver, and I have to, you know, get bigger sponsors, and I have to strengthen my fighter roster. Those are the two things that, you know, sponsorship and fighter roster. Those are the two things that I'm going to be, you know, working on quite a bit.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm really glad that you seem to be more motivated now than ever. You seem to be, you know, certainly headed in the right direction, and I'm glad that the mere mention of you selling your company was just you sort of blowing off steam, and I'm glad that you're going to be in it, because longevity is the key in this industry. Not that many people, you know, not that many promotions have been able to do what you've been able to do in the world of mixed martial arts, and you know, I think that there's certainly a bright future out there for your organization and for the fighters as well, because I know that you. Yeah, I mean, we all care about the welfare of the fighters. I do, you do, and we want to see what's best for them. So I'm glad you're at it. I'm glad that you're doing so well, Mark. There's the Maximum Fighting website at MaximumFighting.com. Are there any other places where people can check out what's going on with you?
Of course, my Twitter. You go to Twitter.com/MaximumFighting, and that's my Twitter page, and then of course Facebook. I have open Facebook with Mark Pavlich or the Maximum Fighting Championship, and of course our mobile text club, and we have all kinds of stuff. We're our phone app's coming out next week, and you know, my obsession with the social media has grown much stronger.
And I noticed that you're friends with Sean Tompkins. I saw that on your Facebook page.
Great. I've always been friends with Sean Tompkins. I mean, always been a great. He's another Canadian, and he's always been a really good guy. And you know, I've always had a great deal of respect for him because he knows what he's doing. He's not some piker that just jumped in this business. He's been in it from the beginning.
What did you see the Sam Stout knockout of Eve Edwards?
Awesome. I love Eve Edwards, but I'm a big Sam Stout fan, and Sam's just an all-around great guy, and you know, he deserves it, and you know, they're both good guys, but at the same time, is that's the sport we're in, right? That can happen.
That was one of the scariest knockouts I've seen.
Scary.
I mean, really. I mean,
scary.
You know. All right, Mark, thanks a lot. Take care, and we'll talk to you sometime down the road, brother.
Take care, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
So long, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Many thanks again to Mark Pavlich for coming back on the show to give us an update. I'm sure that his latest appearance will give people plenty to think about and discuss. That's what you get with Mark Pavlich, folks. We appreciate him taking the time to check in here with us. Regardless of what you think of him personally, he does put together some very solid shows in a marketplace where one entity is absorbing everything else in sight. It's monopoly capitalism, and it's pretty, pretty frightening. News and rumors here, Silva vs. Okami card. The UFC has confirmed the full card for their UFC Rio, or Silva vs. Okami event. In addition to the main event, they've got Forrest vs. Shogun 2, Brendan Schaub in a potentially distasteful fight against Big Nog, and Edson Barboza vs. Ross Pearson. I don't know, something about the card feels flat to me. I don't want to see Forrest vs. Shogun 2. I think, you know, Forrest has done well since he's beaten Shogun the first time. And, you know, why not? If he beats Shogun again, I'm not sure that really does anything for him. He should fight. You can even make an argument that he should fight John Jones, okay? Or, you know, some of the other prominent fighters in that division. We'll see what happens. I'm not surprised, really, but we'll see what this Brazilian show brings. Hoist Gracie, would Hoist Gracie fighting on that card amount to something special? Maybe not from an in-ring standpoint, but still, it would have at least made the card noteworthy in some way. I know he reportedly wanted the fight on the show pretty badly. Then again, there's definitely a question of how competitive it would be after the last fight. Is Hoist becoming Captain Ahab type figure here? I think Hughes is just too strong for him in grappling. I don't know. If Hoist tried that fight standing up in UFC 1, they would have had to bring Hicks in to take out Art Jimison in the second event. I think a rematch with Hughes would be a fairly slow-paced kickboxing match over 3 rounds. Hughes would definitely probably win 30-27, but I don't know. The first fight obviously wasn't competitive, all right? Strikeforce website was hacked. A lot of people were left scratching their heads over recent news items on the Strikeforce official website, which announced unrealistic fights between Fedor and Anderson Silva or George St. Pierre. I would have liked to have seen such matchups, but, you know, I personally would have liked to see these same hackers change the site's front page to announce Dana White challenging Fedor to a street fight, but at least it gave people something to talk about for a while. Of course, that's because those hard-to-believe fake hacker matchups are better than anything the UFC's official website has announced in recent memory. We actually had rumors going around of yet another match between, get this, BJ Penn versus John Fitch. No more rematches unless the earlier fights absolutely call for them by leaving questions unanswered. Seriously, what's their obsession with doing the same fights over and over again? Uriah Faber is trying to get another fight with Dominic Cruz. That was a pretty decent fight, but still not as close as something like Maynard versus Edgar. Okay, I think Dominic Cruz clearly won that fight. I don't want to see another rematch. I don't want to see Forrest Griffin versus Shogun too. All right, that's just my opinion. But you know, they're just oversaturating their audience with these, you know, rematches. Okay, and I don't want to see it. We almost had 4 fights between Randy and Chuck. Okay? That's simply madness, my friends. Thank God the MMA fans were collectively able to talk Dana White and the great Gazoo Joe Silva out of it. I think if a few Tito fans register 6 to 10 fake Twitter accounts between them, they could easily convince Dana to set up another fight. Come on, guys. No more unnecessary rematches. If Fitch and BJ are meant to fight each other again, it'll happen for the belt or some other, you know, significant matchup. I just don't want to see it again for the sake of rematches. What else do we have? Do we have anything else for you? Oh, yeah, carsonscorner@gmail.com is our address. That's carsonscorner@gmail.com. Please email me. We'll be back very soon with some listener emails. Write in and let us know what you think of Dana White. And should he ever be allowed to be in charge of creative projects at any level, or whether you think there would be an unmitigated disaster of epic proportions due to Dana's lack of creativity and good ideas. Also, if you want to follow me on Facebook, you can just type in Bob Carson, and you can follow me on my Twitter account, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And lastly, if you're into politics and you enjoyed my interview with Jeff Munson and you want to hear similar talk, similar discussions, please go to my political website at bobcarson13.podomatic.com. We are on 5:30 a.m. on Underground Progressive Radio. You can stream Carson's Corner Live, the political show that is, every Saturday and Sunday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. The address that you can stream it on is undergroundprogressiveradio.webs.com. That is undergroundprogressiveradio.webs.com. I'm Bob Carson. Thank you very much to Mark Pavlich. We'll be back at you with some listener emails soon. Until next time, folks, show some respect.